Hello, hello, everybody. Welcome to the second full episode of the Compounding Podcast. This is truly the first episode, though, I guess you could say. This is the first full episode that I do that's an interview. I sat down with my neighbor, Jim, and interviewed him. We talked for a while, had a wide-ranging conversation from everything about his job that he's currently had, what industry he's in, things like his family life, his marriage, and things like that. So it was a wide-ranging conversation. It was a very good conversation. Very interesting, and I think he will have some things to, worth listening to, worth pondering on and worth thinking about. And I, for sure, even after editing this episode, was able to sit down and really think about the stuff that we talked about even deeper than when we were first talking about it, and try and comprehend it a little bit more. And it's really good. It's really good to kind of think about the stuff that other people have already experienced in life, and what ways that you can apply it to your life to better your life and to get to the next level. So enjoy this first full interview episode with Jim Fredrickson. And if you haven't already, go ahead and check out our Facebook page. You can go to compoundingpodcast.com. That link will redirect you right to our Facebook page. That is where I will post all of both these episodes, as well as show notes, and give you kind of updates and notifications and things like that. That'll just be another platform for other people to engage with and things like that. If you want to go ahead over to the Facebook page and comment on this post or on the most recent post, a question that you want to tell, that you want me to tell the next person I interview, go ahead and do that. I'll go through as many questions as we get, and I'm going to pick the few of the most interesting ones to ask the next guest on the podcast. So, again, enjoy this interview with Jim. Check out our Facebook page, and hope you stick all the way to the end. Thanks so much. Jim Fredrickson, welcome to the first episode of the Compounding Podcast, and thank you for coming on here and being the first person that I interview, even though it might have been a weird request.
Thank you.
So, Jim, you are my neighbor and have been for the short amount of time I've been living here in Florida, about 8 months or so, and you've been down here for how long?
7 years.
7 years. Okay. Yeah, that's awesome. And it feels like this whole area is kind of a mix of people from New York or Chicago or wherever, right?
That's very true.
And I'm obviously originally from Chicago, and you're from where exactly in New York?
Rochester, New York.
Rochester. Okay.
Sorry about the Bears losing, by the way.
Yeah, you don't need to. You don't need to bring that up. Social media hasn't been too nice about that one. And I was actually here when that happened. Not a great way to end the season, that's for sure. So you're from Rochester, and were you born and raised there? Or?
No, but for the most part, that's where I grew up. We moved there when I was fourth grade. My dad was in retail. We moved every 2 years, and then we ended up in Rochester. Then my parents got divorced, and I ended up staying there. So I was 40 years there.
Okay, and then you had?
2 kids. We have a daughter and a son. We have 3 grandchildren.
And how old are your grandchildren?
I have no clue. Why would you ask me that?
Okay.
They're roughly 9, 7, and 5, or maybe 8, 4, and 3, somewhere around.
I guess those are fine numbers to go off of. And so you said your dad was in retail. Was he traveling a lot, or what kind of retail was he in?
He was a manager of a store called Neisner's, which was the predecessor to Ames, which became Kmart. So he worked stores, and every couple of years he got transferred. So the family, my brother Jay's probably lived in 7 places when he was a kid. That was just the business. So he was the store manager. And then when we ended up in Rochester, we ended up staying there, and he ended up managing, and it was called Ames, but it was the predecessor of Kmart.
Yeah, that's awesome. And how many brothers do you have?
Jay, Jeff, John, Jim. The four J's.
Three brothers. Okay, and you're the youngest, right?
I'm the youngest and the smartest.
Okay. So I know Jay, and we were talking actually about Jay coming onto the podcast, which would be super cool too.
Yeah, I told him about it. I thought it would be pretty cool.
And you're how much younger than him?
9 years.
9 years. Okay. And so you were saying to me, you were how old when like he moved away or left for college?
Yeah, when I was 9, he was 18. He went to college, so I didn't really know him. And, you know, we kept connected over the years, but not a lot, because he lived in Illinois and I lived in Rochester. And then he's been down here for 15 years, and that's how we ended up down here. And it's actually pretty cool because we've become very tight, you know, since we moved down here. It's actually pretty neat.
And so did you guys find this area because of him down here in Florida?
Yeah.
Okay, and he's been down here for how many years?
I don't know how many years he owned it, but I think they've been down here about 15 years.
All right, well, let's hop right into these questions I have and some notes here on my phone. And we've kind of talked about some of these questions before recording this, but I'm really interested in diving deeper into them a little bit. And I actually haven't sent you the first episode yet. I'm actually just about finished putting it all together. But if you are listening to this podcast right now, the first episode would have been already out, so you can go back and listen to that first. I just go into a little more of the backstory as to why I'm starting this podcast and doing these interviews and kind of telling a story around that, also while explaining some of the questions I'm going to be asking, stuff like that. So go ahead and go back. You can listen to the first episode if you want to. It'd probably give you, you know, good background, a good backstory before listening to this first full one. In the short, the reason why I've started this podcast is so people in high school or my age in college, or even if you're just starting a career, they can learn from the lessons and the stories of people who have already had successful careers, people who have built businesses and started families, so on and so forth. And actually, the idea first came from my grandmother when she gave me a sheet that explained exactly what compounding interest is. She gave that to me. But also too, because you see all of these people in the media today, like the Kardashians and music stars, celebrities, social media influencers, you name it. And they only post about the glitz and the glam and the fame. But not all of us will be like that. And even if we are like that, no one truly tells you the stories of how they got to where they are, and no one really dives deep into how they manage their money or where they invest their money, things like that. And it actually got me wondering, well, me being down here in Florida, where there are a lot of people who have retired and built businesses and had successful careers, why don't I just turn to the people within my community to have meaningful conversations with them and understand how they got to where they are today? And so I got to thinking about the most simple and broad question I could ask and have that be the main question for this podcast. And so actually, I'm just going to jump right into it. I'm just going to ask you the question right now, Jim. What is the best way to build wealth?
I have no clue. You know, I can tell you my experiences, you know, my life and how we ended up where we are. You know, we're very fortunate to be where we are. And I think there's a lot of luck involved, actually. If I think about my career, if I were to talk to a young person today, I would tell them two things. Find something you're passionate about and take chances. So early in my career, I had opportunities to do things that I had no clue what they were. You know, absolutely no idea how to do it. You know, no idea, but we were a small company, and I would always say to the boss or whomever, says, me, I'll try that. Take chances. And you have to have a passion for what you do. You know, I always say, you know, if I wake up in the morning and, you know, my job is to basically solve problems and deliver for customers. If I wake up in the morning, it's like being in a foxhole. If I stick my head out of the foxhole and there's nobody shooting at me, I need to go do something else. I'm too comfortable. You know, I want something where, you know, I'm challenged and, you know, I have opportunities to grow. Less so now at the end of my career because, you know, I'm getting to the end of my career, but earlier in my career. And it's all about the passion and taking chances, you know. I see a lot of kids or young people that do the same thing every day. And how do you increase your wealth if you're doing the same thing every day? You're going to get a salary increase 3-5% every year. That's it. You have to make major jumps. You know, and you make major jumps by really, you know, finding the opportunities and taking chances to do something differently. You know, that's how I learned about our industry and our business, by, volunteering to do things that, really weren't in my, my scope, my background, or that I probably wasn't even qualified for at the time. But, it worked out. And, I always tell people, you got to be thinking about the next job. You know, what do you need to do to increase your skill set, broaden your resume to get the next job? Because in order to get salaries that, are at the upper levels, I'll call it, you need to have some big jumps. You can't grow 3-5% a year and get from, a $50,000 starting salary to $150,000, salary. You have to do different things. You have to get out of your comfort zone and really think about what else can you do to expand your skill set, or what else can you do within the current company or another company, to take that next leap.
Yeah, I like when you said expand to the next job, because that doesn't mean you have to look for a whole new job or career. Like, it could be another task or opportunity within the same organization that you're currently in.
It could be an opportunity within the current company. Listen, companies, people have to think for themselves. Companies are not beholden to you. Companies are beholden to their profit margin, period. And they're going to look at, companies look out for themselves. So you have to take the initiative, whether it be within your current organization or some other organization, to continue to grow. And there's always opportunities. There's always opportunities depending on the company, if it's large enough within the current organization. But, people have to be proactive. They have to work with their manager to, say, hey, I want to do more. I want to do more. The people that I like coming into my office are the guys and the gals that, are telling me, hey, I want to do more. What else can I do for the organization? But you got to look out for yourself. I took the job that I'm in now. I was in a very good job, loved it. It was a great opportunity. I was doing well, but this was a better opportunity. And, I did it for myself. It was better for me. I could have stayed in the other organization, but this was actually a better opportunity for me personally. So, and I don't think people do that enough. I just don't think that they really think 2 years down the road, where do I need to be? What skill do I need to have? And it's even worse now, or harder now, because the world's changing so fast. The business community is, in our industry, we're changing 10 times as fast as we used to, 15 years ago. And it's all about technology. The technology that's coming into play, your skills are going to become stagnant if you're really not keeping aware or being aware of what's going on in the world around you with respect to technology.
Yeah, so you have to constantly be on top of evolving your skill set to what your job is.
Well, look at the U.S. industry. There's no manufacturing. I mean, there's little manufacturing in the U.S. industry, right? 20 years ago, that was completely different. That changed because of technology. We're a service industry for the most part. Well, I shouldn't say that, but we have a lot of services. And you got this technology. And it's, in your generation, I am so happy I'm my age, because your generation, it's going to be even faster and more change, more quicker. And you really got to stay ahead of it, maintain, a career in employment. Companies are using technology to lower costs. I do it. That's what we do. But, you as a young individual, you really got to understand what's going on in the world of business with respect to technology and, where you need to go, et cetera.
Okay. And then tell me a little bit about the industry that you're in. I know you're in market research, right? But explain that a little bit more, like how you got into that and how it all started.
Currently the group COO for a market research company. We're a $200 million company based out of Paris. I've been doing this my entire career. I got into it as a junior programmer, so at the bottom of the totem pole.
And how old were you?
25, I think. I think I was making $18,000 a year. And I got into it by luck. I hadn't planned on it, but I got into it by luck. I happened to see a job ad in the newspaper one day, and I applied for it, and I got the job. And I grew up through the ranks. I've done every job in the company. And what we do is we're the people that ask you questions about why you buy products, why you love Coca-Cola better than Pepsi. We do a lot of product design, innovation, new products, customer satisfaction. So we do a lot of, we work for all the major brands, Kraft, P&G, et cetera, trying to understand why the consumers do or do not buy their products. At the end of the day, that's what it's all about, selling the products. And we help them to do that. And yeah, I grew up in the company. I spent 25 years in one company. And by the time I left there, I was in a similar role as I am today, but at a smaller company. And it was great because I had the opportunity really to do every part of the, you know, I understand every part of the business. So yeah, I mean, I just grew up in it. And that's the company that gave me the opportunities. So, to do different things and, you know, to learn different parts of the business so that I could take a role like I have today where, you know, I'm the COO of a $200 million company. You know, and that's what I talk about, taking a chance, you know, taking a risk, you know, doing different things. If I hadn't done that, I'd probably be very happy, you know, doing, you know, work that I used to do, but my income would be significantly lower, you know, obviously.
So did you study that in college then?
No, I was a math major. I was going to be a teacher. I would have been an incredibly bad teacher. But that was my passion. I wanted to be a math teacher. And I happened to, like I said, I happened to open up a newspaper one day when you probably don't even know what a newspaper is, but they used to have newspapers and there was a job wanted in there, a junior program, and I applied for it and I got it. Changed my whole life. You know, changed everything that I had planned for changed on that day when I got it, be hired by that company.
Okay, so what made you make that decision to take that job and go into that industry? Did you need the money at the time, or were you just taking any job because you thought, oh, maybe this will just be a part-time until I land something else?
You know, I was intending on going to grad school at night and getting I needed to get my master's for a teacher. So I was intending to go to grad school at night, and then I just – and I did. I went for, I think I finished up 2/3 of it. But I fell in love with what I do. I mean, I really enjoy market research. I really enjoy the company. I love what I do. You know, I have a real passion for it. You know, and, you know, every day I wake up and, you know, I'm happy to be going to work.
So you do a lot of traveling. Was that just because when you changed companies, it was based out of Paris and they had clients all over the world already? So you almost had to travel, or?
Yeah, my previous company was based out of Paris as well. I've worked for three companies. I put 25 years in one. I put 2.5 years in the other, and I've got 7 years in this one. My previous company was based out of Paris, and yeah, it's just about where the locations are. We have, you know, my team is spread out globally. I have staff in Europe. I have staff in India. I have staff in Asia. I have staff in North America. So, you know, I just travel from management perspective to do business reviews. You know, all of that. And then we do a lot of client travel as well. So, meet more clients. You know, when we have a major contract, we have a $10 million client that I'm responsible for. So I, you know, I go around the world wherever they are. It's AC Nielsen, whom you may have heard of. But, you know, so any big client engagement, you know, the senior team will get involved.
Okay, awesome. So tell me a little bit about how your company conducts its research. For example, you said you will ask people why they like Coke over Pepsi. And so how do you go about doing that specifically?
We do it all online. We have what we call a community of respondents. So people like you, they offer to give us their opinions and then we reward them. So we do it all online. We'll send you an invitation to a survey. Ask you for, you know, your opinion or to answer the questions on whatever the topic is if you qualify. And then we reward you at the end of it. So at, you know, market research has been around for, you know, years and years and years. It used to all be done in person. So if you would be walking through a mall, you know, somebody would come up to you and ask you a bunch of questions. That's market research. We do all of it online. So everything we do is 100% online, which again is where the technology comes into play. You know, a company of this size 20 years ago would have probably 3 times as many employees as we have today. But because of technology, you know, we can do it faster, cheaper, arguably better online.
That's interesting because you see in some commercials and movies, they'll stop you in the street and have you answer some questions. Or like you said, even in the mall as well, I've seen that. So when you initially started your career, was it a lot of that, or did you ever do that?
We did a lot of in-person surveys, but most of it was phone. So we would call and bother you during dinner. You know, the nice thing about online is that that invitation can sit in your email inbox, and you can take that survey whenever you want. Yeah, whenever is most convenient for you. But yeah, when I started, we did most of the work on telephone.
All right, so one of the questions I had written down was, we actually sitting here a couple of nights ago, and I asked you what you do on planes, because when you travel, it's some serious travel. It's 24 hours of traveling, two planes or more to Hong Kong or India or wherever, right? So the next question I had written down was, what do you do on planes? Do you use that time to further educate yourself or read?
I do absolutely nothing. No, I don't. A lot of people like to work on a plane. I just can't do it. So I read. I do nothing beneficial on the plane.
You read, though.
I read, I watch movies, I sleep.
What do you read, though? I mean, reading is productive and beneficial.
Mostly newspapers and magazines. I love to read, you know, and it's another thing I encourage people to do. You know, you gotta keep up with what's going on. You know, I read the New York Times, I read the Wall Street Journal, I read Economist magazine. I got like four or five different things that I read. Just see what's going on in the world, you know, what's happening around you. So mostly that. I don't do an awful lot of productive things on a plane.
Okay, so following up to that question, I wanted to ask you what the best book or article that you've read is, one that sticks out to you that has maybe most impacted you in your life or in some sort of circumstance.
The best book I ever read business-wise was Thomas Friedman, The World is Flat. I think I mentioned that to you. But that's like 10 years old. It's probably 10 years old. It was when the internet was first starting to dominate in business. And companies realized that they could build products with a global supply stream, or supply, whatever the products were. So you could have people in low-cost centers in, you know, or India, et cetera. And it was all due to the internet. So, you know, for example, in our company, 80% of our staff is in what I call a low-cost production center. So either in Eastern Europe or in India. And we can do that because of the internet. And it was all about how the world was flattening. You know, and it was a fascinating book at the time. It's very outdated now. You know, everybody knows that now. But at the time, it was like a real eye-opener. And that's when I started to think about building a global support structure, you know, for the company that I was working at, where I could have a person in China doing task A, I could have a person in India doing task B, I could have a person in the U.S. doing task C, you know, et cetera, and we could still deliver for our clients. So leveraging the best that we have, you know, around the world rather than working locally. It was very cool. It's a very cool book. He's a New York Times columnist. He still works for the New York Times. He's a very, very smart guy. That was probably the best book. That was the book that really motivated me to think about being in a global organization. That's where I wanted, you know, that's where I got the passion, if you will, for trying to run a global organization.
When you read that, were you at that global level yet in that company?
We were, but smaller. But we were expanding. And we were building facilities in India at the time. The company I'm with now is truly global. I mean, we're in 21 countries. You know, and I have people everywhere. But again, you know, I can have, like I said, somebody over there in India doing this, somebody over in Europe doing that, all on the same project. And it all works because of the technology.
So going back to what is the best way to create wealth, I had one of the questions down here as, if you're working for a company like yourself, like you do, what employer advantages should people take advantage of? Like, since you travel a lot, the first thing that comes to my mind is travel points or racking those up or, you know, what, like 401ks, investing. What's your advice on all of that?
I mean, Beth and I, you know, we were I think late 20s when we got married. You know, we always invested in the 401k. We maxed out our 401k from day one. We didn't have a dime between us, you know, when we were together or when we first got married. We didn't have a nickel between us, but we always maxed out. It's free money. And I don't know, you know, people are, you know, if it's not in your paycheck, you're not going to spend it. You're not going to worry. You should always max out, you know, anything like that you have. The other thing I was thinking about is we always lived within our means, you know, and we would have friends that would, you know, be the same level of, you know, income, if you will, that we were, that lived in a, you know, $300,000 house. We lived in a $100,000 house. You know, we always lived within our means. And we were religious about taking part of our income, even when we had no money, and putting it aside. Always did that. And then, you know, it was just common sense to me. you know, but not a lot of people do that. I mean, in particular, I see people today, young people today, you know, they're driving around the $80,000 car or what have you. And, you know, it's just, that's wasted money. I mean, it really is. You have to start at the very beginning, and you know, I call it living within your means. You know, I think that's very important. As far as work benefits, I mean, they're, you know, obviously I travel a lot. I get the miles. But the biggest one is just taking an opportunity of whatever they're going to give you for free and maxing it out. You know, start with now. You know, don't start when you're 35. Start now.
Yeah, and I touched on that in the first episode of the podcast about starting early and often. Compounding will work in your favor the earlier you start. And this podcast is obviously the compounding podcast because of that. And where it all started was that sheet that I spoke about that my grandmother gave me. And if you don't know what sheet I'm talking about, you can go to thecompoundingpodcast.com. It's not The Compounding Podcast. It's just compoundingpodcast.com. And that'll take you to our Facebook page. I have a link there to the article from the last episode. And this chart is there for you to take a look at so you can reference it. But it's all about saving early and often. And in this example, the guy did that for a short amount of time and then stopped. And when he stopped, his buddy invested for like 3 or 4 times as long as the first guy who invested early and often. And that guy wound up with more money invested at retirement age because of compounding.
I'll show you after this is done. I have that Excel sheet on my laptop. I have, you know, the number. I think I'm using 5% right now. Showing how compounding works. And I did it over 20 years. And, you know, I use that for my own purposes, actually, you know, to see where we are. But, yeah, it's absolutely huge.
So you've actually, like, calculated that. Like, you've plugged the money in that you have invested into the spreadsheet to give you a better idea of where you're going to be?
Yeah, I look at it and say, what would happen over the next 10 years? So with what I have in my 401k and all that, if the annual return is 5%, you know, make up the number, where will I end up? Because I'm 57 years old, you know, and at some point we'll be thinking about, you know, Beth and I retiring. So, you know, I use that to sort of give me a benchmark of where I am today. But it's simple math. And it's simple math, but I bet you 95% of the people can't create that calculation.
But, like, what I don't understand is how it's not specifically taught in schools growing up, the financials, the money, things like that. I mean, I've always been business-minded and crunching the numbers type of thinking, but Lindsay and I have grown so much, even just in the relatively short time that we've been down here living on our own and having to figure all of that out. Because in society today, you don't really figure that out until you're really thrown in it and you have to.
Well, Beth does all of that for us. She does a fantastic job. She had a great career as well. We decided many years ago that she was going to stay home, and then she took over all the financial responsibility, and she does all of that. You know, honestly, if I took 100 people off the street and said, show me how to do compound interest, 5 of them won't be able to figure it out.
So is there a specific investment or strategy in terms of stocks or mutual funds that you have followed over the years? For example, like Warren Buffett says all the time to go into or invest into the S&P 500 or mutual funds that match the S&P 500 and just throw your money in those and put your head down until retirement and it'll do well. Is there anything specifically like that that you follow?
We're what I would call conservative / aggressive, slightly aggressive. Yeah, and we do it. We have a firm that we use. Don't ask me the name because I can't think of it right now. So we're not super aggressive, but we're not, you know, investing in, you know, bonds either. So we're in the middle, more slightly outside the, you know, the conservative line into aggressive. but the strategy itself, actually Beth does all of that. So she meets with the lady, you know, I meet with her periodically, but as far as what we're in and what we're trying to do and all of that, I couldn't tell you. She handles, believe it or not, I have no clue where we have a bank account, so I hope we have one somewhere, but she handles all of that. I hope it's out there. I don't know where it is, but I hope it's out there. But we do a lot of 401k. You know, we have into the 401k. We also have money that we've invested on our own. So it's probably 50-50. You know, and, you know, as our income has increased, we always upped, you know, the level of percentage that we just pulled out every year, you know, every week out of the paycheck. So if I got a 10% raise, we would put 10% more away. you know, et cetera. So, you know, and again, if the money's not in your pocket, you're not going to spend it.
And that all goes back to living within your means, right? One of my favorite books is actually Rich Dad, Poor Dad by Robert Kiyosaki. If you haven't read it, go read it. It's really good. And in there, he calls it getting doodads. So people driving around in an $80,000 car, that's a liability. That's a waste of money, and that's a doodad. And he goes on to talk about some things where people, when they increase their income, they get more liabilities, more stuff that they need to spend money on for the upkeep of it, rather than turning that money into investments or rather than making that money work for them. And what people don't realize is that if they invest that money right now, they'll be able to drive around in those $80,000 cars later on.
Yeah, when we bought our first house, again, we had to borrow the money from best grandfather for the down payment. It was FHA loan. And when we went in for the mortgage, I'm making this up a little bit because I don't remember exactly. I think the house was like $90,000, and the mortgage company said, well, you can afford a $200,000 house. So, well, no, I can't. I'll be house poor. I mean, and I see that all the time. You know, even here, you know, we could live in a much bigger home and all that, but are you going to be any happier? You know, and that's income that you're spending on, you know, building that you're not using for, you know, entertainment or whatever, you know, whatever you want to do. So, and, you know, and same thing with our kids. I've always told them that just, you know, don't go nuts. You know, you don't have to have the biggest house, the biggest cars, the biggest boats, you know, what have you. And you're not going to be any happier.
So I'm big on goal setting and writing down your goals and checking in on them periodically to see what you're doing and see how things have even changed. And Lindsay and I wrote down our 5-year goals, and we looked at them even just 4 or 5 months after writing them down, and we were surprised at how some of them have actually changed, and a lot of them stayed the same. But is that something that you do? Do you write down your goals and check in on them from time to time?
Never did it. No, never did it. I believe in it. But I never did it, and I strongly encourage employees to do the same thing. That's why I was sort of mentioning earlier, you know, you got to be thinking about where you want to be, you know, in 2-3 years, and then how you're going to get there. And you know, I'm always encouraging people to think in it that way. So it's similar, but different. But no, I don't know if Beth and I ever wrote down a plan, you know, on where we wanted to be. You know, we started, like I said, you know, with zero, and it just sort of happened. And frankly, without the family support, I wouldn't be where I am today. You know, I mean, she's working the long hours, I'm working the long hours, you know, you're sacrificing, you know, et cetera. And without her support, I wouldn't have the job that I have today, and I wouldn't be as successful as I am in that job today. You know, you got to have that. You got to be on the same page because it's hard. You know, if you're going to have to work 24 hours, you know, you need, Beth has to cover for me. You know, she, you know, has to do things that I would have had to do or whatever. You know, I've worked 24-hour days. I'm sure everybody has. But, you know, you have to have that support behind you. And me for her as well, you know, when she was working. So, I mean, you have to have that. When I'm gone on the road, when the kids are younger, you know, that's a burden on her. You know, she's taking care of that. If she's, you know, not happy about it, then it's not going to work out so well. But she's always been fantastic about it, you know, supporting me and whatever my job was. And we always make the decisions together, you know, and the changes that I've made and all of that. So it's very, very important.
So we touched on this a little while ago while talking. You were saying that there's a lot of luck involved and that you have to take chances. And you told a story about how Beth just randomly quit her job to stay at home and watch Josh and the kids, and you didn't know how it was going to work out. Can you touch on that a little bit?
Yeah, he was. She had a very good job. She was working for a law firm. It was doing very well. We were home one afternoon, and I can't remember why, and Josh was probably, I don't know, 7 years old, and he was at a daycare center after school. So the school bus came around, dropped off all the neighborhood kids, and then took Josh to the daycare center, and we picked him up later. And we just happened to think about it and says, you know, this is silly. He's 7 years old, or he's only going to be 7 years old one time. You know, we have the means where we could figure out how to get by if we didn't have her income. You know, we weren't making a ton of money, but we just decided, you know, it's more important. And she quit like the next day or the next week. We never thought about it, never planned it. And somehow it all worked out. You know, and it was just a decision we made that there was the family was more important than the money. And, you know, we never looked back on that. There was no negative, you know, it all worked out. And, you know, she was be able to stay with him, you know, at that period of time when he was young. And that was fantastic. Now, a lot of young people can't do that. You know, they need both incomes. But again, you know, if we're, it sort of all ties together. If you're living, I hate to keep saying the same thing. If you're living within your means, you know, you can make decisions like that on where you're going to, you know, put your money or not put your money. It was pretty cool actually how that worked out.
And you said she hasn't worked since or?
No, she's done a couple of things. She did a lot of, benefits.
She does a lot of volunteer work.
Right? A lot of volunteer work. Yeah, absolutely. She always did a lot of that. She's done it down here, in Florida, but a lot in Rochester. I don't think she got her, insurance agency license, but, in Rochester, but then she did more volunteer work. So,
which is interesting too, because Dave Ramsey says, "Live like no one else today, so you can live and give like no one else later." And because you lived like no one else by living within your means, and because of the structure you put on your family, it allowed her to quit her job and give her time to other people through volunteer work and things like that.
At the time that she quit, I mean, we were middle class, I'll call it. You know, and we were doing okay, but then, you know, her income went away and we were still able to survive. And then, you know, my job, my opportunities, you know, increased. So over a period of years, we compensated for it. And, you know, again, you know, I took a couple chances and, you know, when I left the one company, I went to another company and, you know, that's a big risk. You know, I've been there 25 years, but I got a big boost in income because my responsibilities was much larger. And, you know, I took that chance. Same thing with coming to the company I'm in now. You know, it's much smaller than the company I left. The company I left is like a $2 billion company. You know, and I was doing a similar role, but this is a smaller company. But I just believe it has more opportunity in the marketplace because of what we're doing. But, you know, it was a big chance. And I could have stayed at the other company for 10 years and, you know, done what I was doing. But, you know, I took a chance. And then financially, it paid off. I mean, we're doing very well, so it paid off for me.
So the second question that this whole podcast and these interviews are kind of reliant on is actually the same as the first question, but with a little bit of a twist. And it's it goes like this. If you take the monetary definition out of wealth, now what is the best way to build or create wealth? So family, relationships, happiness, whatever the meaning of wealth takes you besides, you know, it meaning money.
That's a tough question. I actually thought about that. I don't know how to answer that question, actually. I really don't. You know, we've been married, oh, God, this is on tape, isn't it? Either 27 or 28 years. I'm not sure which one it is. It's a road. You know, you have your ups and downs, and you know, I love her dearly. She's a great partner. And somehow, some way, we connected. You know, we found each other. But you know, it's a journey, man. It ain't easy. You know, it really isn't easy. You have your good times, your bad times, and everybody does. Not just us, everybody does. And somehow, some way, you know, we end up where we are here today. How that happened? No clue. You know, I have absolutely no clue why she stayed with me for as long as she has. I have no clue. You know, I don't know. I'm pretty, you know, with friends, you know, I don't get involved too much in the silliness of life. You know, if I don't know, you know, somebody said X and oh my God, why'd they say that? Or somebody said Y or
drama.
Y. Yeah, the drama. Thank you. That's a better word. You know, within the family, you know, there's certain things that I've done very well, but there's certain things that I could do better. You know, I'm not a great communicator with the family. I don't, you know, I'm not a phone guy, you know, anything like that. You know, and I wish there was other things, you know, there was things that I, but that's my character, you know, and I've learned I can't change who I am. You know, I'm not going to call Josh and spend an hour on the phone with him. Beth will, you know, but I'm not going to do that. I just don't do that. I don't know why, but it's not in my nature to, you know, to do that. So, I mean, it's hard to say what makes a successful, you know, family or a marriage or whatever. It's just a lot of hard work.
So my questions are over, but I know that you had some notes written down. Is there anything else you wanted to touch on?
You know, I go back to the just the job, you know, the way the world is today, and the speed of change that's occurring in the business world is incredible. I mean, it really is incredible. And you see it. I mean, you know, Amazon. I mean, just the speed of change that's occurring and the innovation that's occurring. And if companies don't pay attention to that, and if individuals don't pay attention to that, they're going to be left behind. And my strongest, what I always tell, you know, when we hire new employees, sometimes I get an opportunity to speak to them, not always, but sometimes. And I always tell them, listen, you know, you got to be aware of what's happening around you because your job is going to be significantly different in 2 years. And if you're not prepared for that, you're not going to have a job. You know, the speed of change is just going to get worse. Not worse is the wrong way. It's going to get better. I mean, it's going to even be faster.
So you believe that not only in your industry, but in almost every industry?
Everywhere. Amazon is going to dominate groceries. You know, and they really are. I mean, they're going to dominate groceries.
Yeah, and we're kind of even seeing that change a lot in real estate right now with the various tech companies coming into the space and such. And I mean, there's no reason that Amazon or Tesla or whatever huge company shouldn't get into the real estate industry as well.
And that's, you know, Amazon's a classic example, but it's everywhere. You know, it really is everywhere. You know, the one area that's really not impacted is what I call the services industry. You know, if you're going to work at McDonald's, well, somebody's got to flip the burger, right? And it's a great job. The speed of change is just unbelievable. That's right. You know, I said it earlier. I'm glad I'm my age, you know, because I'm on the downside of my career, you know, and you guys are just moving into this. And, you know, in my time over the last 10 years, it's been incredible how things have changed, but it's just going to continue to do that. And if people aren't thinking about that, you know, young people, you know, middle people, whatever, anybody who's working, you know, they're going to get left behind. They really are. You got to keep your skill sets up. You know, you got to know what's going on around you in the world. You know, keep developing new skills, adding new skills, and almost no matter what your industry you're in, because it's going to change. You know, 30 years ago, things didn't change that fast. You know, they just didn't. You could work at Sears for 30 years and get a pension and, you know, and retire. Those days are gone. You know, they're absolutely gone. Absolutely gone.
And how would you say someone should keep their skill sets up? Is it by reading, watching videos, or listening?
It's all of the above. You know, I read fanatically. I mean, if I'm sitting here and nobody's here, I'm online reading something, you know, about what's going on in the world, you know, what have you. And, you know, it really is all of the above. You know, take up an opportunity, any resource that you have available to you to just find out what's going on in your field. And again, I said it earlier, you know, you wrote it down. You said, but where do you want to be in 2 years? And how are you going to get there? And because if you're not thinking that way, you're going to become stagnant and you're not going to be required anymore at some point. It's just not going to happen. Yeah. And every industry is different. That's a broad statement. I mean, every industry is different.
Some move slower, some move faster.
Yeah, every industry is different. You know, in our industry, the pace of change is rapid. It's very, very rapid. You know, the cost of delivering what we used to deliver, you know, 10 years ago, 10 years ago, it probably cost us $50,000 to deliver this thing. And now we can do it for $5,000.
You think that's actually that much of a difference?
Oh, yeah. That's a fact. Yeah. Wow. That's a fact. So, I mean, and, you know, every industry is different and I get that. But yeah, it's just because of technology and just what's going on. So.
All right. You got any other notes?
No, I'm done.
All right, awesome. Well, do you have any final thoughts, maybe?
Good luck with this. I applaud you for doing whatever you end up doing. I think it's pretty cool you're doing it, actually, though. So I hope it comes out well. It's pretty cool.
Well, thank you for that. I appreciate it, and it definitely means a lot. I'm excited to hear stories from a whole bunch of different people and just have cool, meaningful conversations, you know. So thank you, Jim, for being the first ever interview on the Compounding Podcast, and thank you for listening to this. Please leave a review, comment, and even send in your questions to ask. I might even be able to ask them to my next guest. I can go through the questions, and who knows, maybe yours will lead into a really cool conversation with the next guest I that I am interviewing. You never know. So if you haven't already, go to compoundingpodcast.com, and that link will redirect you to our Facebook page where you can comment, ask questions, ask those questions for the next podcast, and even be updated on when new episodes come out and all of that. And of course, while you're over there, be sure to like the Facebook page and tell others to listen to the Compounding Podcast. Send this over to anyone who you think might benefit from it. So thank you for listening, and we'll catch you on the next one.